Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Amen. So just earlier this week, I was in a workshop on mental health and wellness during the pandemic. And I heard at one point in a small group something that summed up the whole experience for me. There were a group of four or five of us, and we were asked just to share how things were going. And the first person, crammed into a haphazard kind of working from home space with broken old bicycles hung up on the wall behind them in the basement, looked around quietly and said, as their kids screamed upstairs, "I haven't been alone for an hour in 10 months. And then the next one, sitting in their beautiful living room where they had no one around them, said, "I've never been this lonely in my whole life." The irony of 2020 for me. Without a doubt, COVID-19 is one of the defining shared human experiences in history. You could ask anybody, anywhere in the world, what this year has been like for them, and they'll probably have something extraordinary to say. It's been since World War II since something affected all our ordinary lives so much. But there's very little that's been shared about this shared experience. Instead, we've tended to be pushed to one side of a spectrum or another. We have, on the one hand, families where all the adults present are working from home while the kids try to learn from home, where everyone is jammed into one place, where the adults are waking up early in the morning to try to cram in a little email before the day starts and staying up late to try to get things finished. People are constantly available and present to both work and to family, and never really available or present for either one. And then on the other hand, we have the opposite in all its many forms. We have families suffering from the massive increases in unemployment, unsure how to get by, standing in food pantries in crowds two or three times the ordinary size week after week. We have people in jobs too hands-on or too crucial to be able to work from home, risking their health and their lives every day to keep our world functioning. And we have retired people and seniors cut off from children and grandchildren, not overwhelmed with human and social contact, but starved of it, unable to see friends or family, cut off from churches and support in the time of the greatest fear and anxiety many of us have known. We see lonely children unable to have playdates, but whose first words that they can read will be mute and start video because they're learning literacy on Zoom. Most of us who are still able to have some kind of work or family or human connection have been overwhelmed by the volume of it. Most of us who have free time and space are starved by the lack of that connection. In ordinary times, of course, we'd shift things around a bit, right? The lonely, isolated grandparents would help the parents and the kids, but that's exactly the thing we can't do right now. It strikes me that Jesus knew both sides of this one. In today's gospel story, of course, we see him overworked and underrested. They bring to Jesus all who are sick or possessed with demons, and he heals many of them. But he could never be enough because they pile in and flock around him until the whole city is crowded at his door. You'll notice that they start bringing the people to him to be healed in the evening at sundown. So we can only imagine him healing people late into the night before finally begging off to get some rest. And then he wakes up early in the morning, leaving maybe those disappointed ones still waiting overnight at the door. He gets up early, long before dawn, while it was still very dark, and he goes to pray. Now, Jesus here is burning the candle at both ends. We know it's not going to work long term for him to give up sleep to have a little time for prayer, but it's good for him to take time to be by himself with God. But no, even there, his disciples follow him, hounding him, hunting him down in the desert. And when they finally find him, they bring him news he already knows. Everyone is searching for you. Yes, that's why he's here, hiding in the desert in prayer. Soon enough, though, he'll know the other end of things just as well. It won't be too long before his popularity fades and the crowds disappear. Soon enough, in fact, he'll be alone. He'll have all the space that he needs for prayer in the dark garden of Gethsemane while his friends drift off to sleep down the hill. And he'll pray in anguish about what's to come. The people will finally stop demanding all of his attention and deny that they even know him. They'll stop pressing in on him to feel his healing touch and leave him alone with God up on the cross until even God finally seems to abandon him and he cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? And the bystanders, like some kind of bizarre ancient social distancing experts, can only take a sponge with vinegar and put it on a stick and give it to him to drink. And it's cold comfort. So Jesus will know soon enough the depths of loneliness and fear, just as much as at this moment in the gospel, he knows the heights of overwhelmedness. And so if you've been in one of those places recently, you know that Jesus has been there too. For now, though, he's still at one end. He's not abandoned, but overrun. So what does Jesus do now when he's overwhelmed? Let us go on, he says, to another town. No, he seems to say, I can't help. Not now. So I have a bad habit sometimes in sermons of undermining the very important work of volunteer recruitment for the church. And so I tremble to preach on this story today when we're about to elect new vestry members and when we are, as always, starved for help in ministry. This story is one in which people beg an overworked Jesus to lend a helping hand with his volunteer ministry, and he says no. Though, is that Jesus doesn't exactly say no to this request. He doesn't even say, not right now, I'm too tired. He says something a little different. Not right here. Let us go on, he says, to the neighboring towns. Not let me go to bed, but let us go on. Not I'm giving up my ministry, but I need to go and do that somewhere else. I need to heal and pray with others. I need to preach and teach to others in another place. No member of this church is a full-time minister. That's not just talking about myself. For 500 years, Episcopal priests have been married, have had home lives, have split their energies and their attentions between ministry in the church and ministry at home and ministry out in the community. And in the last 50 years or so, we've done a much better job of recognizing the ministry of all baptized people, of all the lay people in the church. We've done a much better job of understanding that people's lives at home, people's lives in their jobs, people's lives in our communities are just as much a ministry as anything an ordained person might do. But nobody is a full-time minister on behalf of the church. Over time, the shapes of our ministries, the balance between these different parts of them, shift and change. We step back from church to focus on our families or our work, or we retire and our children move out and we finally have time to volunteer for the church. Some of you, I know, have finally booked vaccine appointments and are telling me how excited you are to be back, able to do things after a season of things maybe lying fallow at home. And whatever these transitions may be in our ministries, wherever our energies shift, they usually don't mean, in reality, that we're stepping back from ministry or service. Because wherever we go to act in love of God and of our neighbor, whatever we do to heal the sick or comfort the afflicted, to care for the poor or welcome children as Jesus did, wherever we do those things, we are ministers of Christ in that place. And in fact, the whole point of our ministry here, the whole point of what we do together, is to equip us and prepare us for our ministries out there, for living and loving in the rest of our lives, the rest of our days. So everything that we do at our annual meeting is perhaps most appropriate on a day when we have our annual meetings from home, because our life together doesn't begin and end in this building. We know from the last year that we can do parts of it wherever we are, but more importantly, we've known forever that what it's for is to bring us back out into the world. That's why my favorite dismissal at the end of the service is go in peace to love and serve the Lord, because that's what we're doing. We're going to love. So I hope that we all, at the end of this exhausting year, find the renewed strength that the prophet Isaiah promises. I pray that God may give power to the faint and strengthen the powerless, that God may guide us in our ministries wherever our energies shift, from home to church to work to the community and beyond. I pray that God may renew us so that we may mount up with wings like eagles, that we may run and not be weary, that we may walk and not faint. Amen.